Hi everyone, welcome. Michelle here, and you are about to hear an interview with Leanna Rubin. Leanna's an actor, and she's made choices with her career that are hers and hers alone. I am a member of Actors Equity. I'm also a member of Screen Actors Guild, and you'll hear in the following interview that Leanna has made some choices that differ from mine. And the thing that I love about this podcast is that I get to hear from people who have differing opinions and thoughts, and there's no judgment here. There's only expression. Leanna's up and coming. She's been doing a lot with her social media. I hope you enjoy this interview. Let me know your thoughts. If you like the Showgirl Tip of the Day podcast, please rate it and review on Apple Podcasts. Also, share it with two friends. This podcast is brought to you by Showgirls Closet, my online vintage boutique. You can find it on Instagram at Showgirls Closet.
She's gonna help you find your own way. Showgirl, all you gotta do is just Showgirl.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's so nice to meet you, although virtually.
I know. I'm so glad this worked out finally. And thanks for
contacting me. Thank you. Of course. And thanks for coming on the Showgirl Tip of the Day podcast.
Absolutely. This is my first ever podcast. So I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Well, I found you through social media. You do a great job posting on Instagram about all the work you do. And we have some friends in common. I know you just worked with Stephanie Parker.
Yes. She's a great dancer. She really inspired me to work on my tap.
She's a great tapper. And this is her second season at the Sharon Playhouse in Connecticut.
Yes.
Tell the listeners, give us a little bit of background. Where did you train? Where did you grow up? And what led you to decide to have a career in the performing arts?
Sure. So I think I was really into old Hollywood. So as a kid, I'd watch a lot of Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire and even Esther Williams. I was super into that performance aspect.
Yes.
And that's what got me into it and just like, I want to do what they're doing. And then my mom sent me on some auditions as a kid and I did the Fringe Festival in New York. And that was great. And then I took a pause with my career and focused on competitive swimming through high school. I didn't really touch acting until college. I applied to all the BFA programs, but because I didn't have a strong enough background, I didn't get into any. And I got a Bachelor of Arts in Musical Theater at American University. And then I wanted more training. So I got a Master's of Fine Arts in Acting at the University of South Carolina. I also went to the O'Neill Center for a semester. I was an acting intern at Milwaukee Rep. And I did Circle in the Square for a summer. So I really tried to make up everything in college from what I didn't do in high school and middle school.
Wow. I think you have some great training under your belt. Let's talk about the last year or so post-pandemic. How did the pandemic affect your career?
Sure. So I would say the pandemic made me hit like an all-time low because I was just seeing myself through theater. I had nothing else going on. I was teaching swimming, but it felt more like a side gig. And I was really just wrapped up into the audition scene. I was going to like 3 auditions a day in New York, pounding the pavement. I was living in New York and I wasn't really booking any roles. And then the pandemic hit and I was just, you know, on the couch thinking, you know, what do I want to do? I can't keep living like this, just going from audition to audition and just validating myself whether or not I book a job. So I decided at that time that I really wanted a way to make money and have financial security in the meantime so that I didn't feel like my whole life was whether or not I booked a job. So I decided to really throw myself into teaching swimming. I created a business. We moved to the suburbs. I started teaching lessons. I hired employees and I made that a whole thing. So I had that and that made me feel like I had a life outside of theater, which is really important. And then I was also thinking, you know, I really want to have more of a say over my career. I really miss performing and I just want to be able to perform. So I actually left the union and felt that that would open more jobs for me and more opportunities, and I could just have more control over my own career. So those were two very big shifts for me that actually I'm thankful a little bit for the break with the pandemic to really evaluate where I was as a performer.
Now, leaving the union, that is such a touchy topic for many people. And, you know, I'm a little bit older than you. And when I first started, all the jobs were union. So literally you could barely do anything and then you had to join the union. But these days I feel like I'll just be honest. I'm very disappointed with Actors Equity. I don't think they served us well in the pandemic. For the first time in over 30 years, I am on withdrawal from the union. So I am not out of the union, but I just put a pause on it. And I can, if I want to audition right now, I can just call them and say, okay, unfreeze me. But that's the first time. And the reason I did it is because I'm just very frustrated with the lack of bargaining power that they have, especially in the touring realm. So can you talk about your Annie tour? I'm curious to find out if you feel like you received fair pay and treatment, even though it was a non-union tour.
Sure. Yeah, the union has definitely shifted over the years. When I joined, it's very much, if you're in the union, you're better. That was very much the mindset that they put actors in. So of course, if you get in the union, you feel validated, like you must be good. But now everyone can join as long as you have one paid gig. So there is no better or worse. And I think that's a huge shift. And there's also just less opportunities than maybe when you were starting out. There is much more non-equity jobs at equity houses, which is primarily where I'm working. The idea is that I want to work at the equity houses on a non-equity contract, or I have been given equity contracts as a non-equity actor, and I've just chosen not to join. So there's a lot of misconceptions, and I feel like many actors don't really understand the world, the union world, and what you can do, and if you have to join or not join, or if you can join. So that's definitely a topic that I feel like many actors need to look into. But yes, so when I left the union, it's been a huge goal of mine to go on tour. I've been wanting it. It was a bucket list opportunity. And once I left, I saw that Annie was going non-union and I thought, this is an incredible opportunity. It's a chance for me to go on tour. So I auditioned after, I think it was like 3 callbacks or whatever. I booked it and I played Mrs. Pugh and understudied Hannigan. And it was an incredible experience, you know, with the fair pay. It's hard to say what is fair, because as, you know, as a swimming instructor, I will always make more doing that than theater. So it's hard for me. I guess I'm coming at a unique situation, since I do have a day job that I love that allows me to take non-union gigs, which a lot of people aren't in that position. So it's hard for me to say what is fair and what isn't, because I can go on a non-union tour for 8 months and then teach swimming in the summer and make up a lot of money. So for me, it is completely fair. Now, a lot of things with non-union tours, I also got lucky because I got my own private room, and many of the other actors in the ensemble did not. So I would say that is something that I feel like non-union tours should fix. Everyone who is a grown adult should be able to have private housing. That's ridiculous. Yes. But as long as actors keep saying yes to things, things won't change. So if there's an actor who's willing to do double occupancy to take $600 a week, it's not going to change. But the non-union tours give starting actors a lot of experience. So in exchange for possibly lower pay than other equity tours, and double occupancy and one-nighter, these actors are getting experiences that they wouldn't normally, because if they were up against equity actors with Broadway credits, they never would maybe get the experience to go on tour. So although there is maybe lower wages and not as great living situations, they are getting something that is going to put them in a higher bracket and make them more competitive. So I see both ways, equity versus non-equity tours. And I'm glad that there are still non-equity tours to give these actors opportunities that they wouldn't normally have.
Thank you so much for that answer. So this podcast is non-judgmental. You know, sure. I have my opinion, and I think that giving the people who listen to this podcast information, as much information from all aspects of all people who are currently working or trying to work, I think that that is the key. And I think that everybody has to choose what's best for them. And mm-hmm. I also think that if we continue to work on making conditions better, it's a hard thing, because I do produce my own stuff, and I know that the main goal is to make a profit. And so, of course, a producer is not going to give you your own room and pay for it if they don't have to. You know, it's all about, it's show business. And that is something that I just want to give that information to everybody who's starting out. Like, yes, it's art, but there's also the business aspect of it. What can you charge for tickets if you're giving everybody their own room? Like, if you're going to put out a tour, you don't want it to go out for a year and then you come back as a producer with no money left over. Do you know? It's so, I see all the sides of it, and I find it's like a giant puzzle, and you have to find out where you fit. And mm-hmm. then over time, you might not fit anymore the way you used to. Your pieces have to go in a different place in the puzzle. And that's what I find the most fascinating. How have you helped yourself with social media? Because I think you're doing such a great job posting all your reels. And, you know, I follow you, I watch what you're doing. I just think it's great.
Yeah, I just hit 900 followers. Oh my God, so many. No, I think it's just a way I made it very all theater. So my social media is just theater from now on. And it really is just self-promotion. And I used to find that very annoying by other actors. Oh, here's them posting their self-tapes. But it's honestly helped with, I feel like it's helped with casting and booking roles, because I don't have a website now, because I figure why pay for a website when you have Instagram and you can just put up as many videos as you want for free. And that's going to be the first place that directors look anyway. So why not just make it all about myself and just put up fun videos and have people follow my career and put, you know, behind the scenes pictures, backstage pictures. And I feel like it's working. I think people are interested and they like the videos, and I like putting it out there. And yeah, so I'm having fun with it. You know, it's not that many followers, but I'm hoping by the end of my next show, I'll hit 1,000. That's my goal.
You know, I don't think it matters how many followers, it's who's watching.
Sure.
And believe it or not, I'm sure you have several casting directors that you're in their feed and they're just seeing what you're up to, because they have a job to do and they want to fill the roles with the right people. So I just think keep going with that. It's amazing. So are you finished with Sharon Playhouse right now? Or are you staying?
I did. Okay. It was a shorter run. It was only 3 weeks compared to my 8 months with Annie, which is definitely interesting. Yeah. So I have about a month between Something Rotten closing, and then my next show will be in Chicago, and that's going to be longer, and that's going to be 2.5 months. And I'm super excited for that because it's my dream show.
What and show is it?
So I'm doing Gypsy at the Marriott Theater. Yeah. It's the best show ever written.
I agree. I agree. That's amazing. Like, I believe it is the best musical that is out there for sure.
Truly, truly. So I'll be playing Electra, Miss Cratchit, and understudying Mama Rose. So a lot.
Whoa. Mama Rose is the role of a lifetime. And that is not an easy role. So it's great that you get to work on it now. Mm-hmm. And then maybe in another production, you'll get cast as Mama Rose. I think that as the years go by, you're just going to get more and more parts, because, like, I don't believe in type, but when I do see you, I see you into those kind of Mama Rose type leading lady roles. Yeah, it's great.
Sure. What people had been saying, you know, my whole life, you'll have to age into your roles, which is another reason I chose to leave the union, because, you know, as I might as well wait to play Mama Rose. I might as well do some other gigs. So I felt that, you know, if I left the union, I can slowly age into my type while also gaining experience. So yeah, so now at least I'm working while I wait to age.
Do you have any career goals, like any big bucket list, like dream things that you would love to do? You said being on tour was one.
Yeah.
So did you like being on tour, by the way?
I did. I think the first 6 months was the happiest I had ever been in my life. I was doing exactly what I wanted to do. I was with a group of great people. I got very lucky on tour. They were all wonderful. And I got to see, you know, see the country. And it was lively and it was fun. And these houses were gorgeous. Then after 6 months, then you start getting burned out. This is the longest run I've ever done. So after 180 performances of Annie, you start pulling different muscles in your brain to be able to like perform the same show again. And I learned so much about myself and the experience. But yeah, it does get hard when you enter your, you know, 50th hotel room and they all look the same and you miss your husband and you miss your dog. And it gets difficult, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, this career is a roller coaster. So the highs are extremely high and the lows are low. So I experienced that on tour. It was the best time of my life. And also it was the hardest I've ever worked. So yeah, it was extremely difficult, but I think every musical theater actor should experience going on tour, because I think it will let you know if this is something you want to continue doing, because it gives you so much education.
It will definitely test you physically and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And imagine being on tour before the internet and before cell phones.
Right.
Back when I was first touring, we had these phone cards that we would have to purchase. And you could call home, but as you spoke, the minutes on your card would decline. So you would have to constantly put money on your phone card. And like everything was about 10 more steps and like triple the expense. So it was crazy.
Imagine. Yeah. I thank God I had my cell phone. I can't imagine. Yeah. Because you already feel isolated. So,
mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So no, I'm glad I had my phone and TV. And again, the people around me were wonderful, and it really was the best experience. And I would go on tour again, but I think a nice little break before my next tour is needed.
Oh, for sure. And you mentioned that you're married, and that's a whole other conversation, because part of our industry involves long distance. And I have several friends that are both people in the relationship are performers, and they're constantly coming and going and visiting each other. That is a challenge.
Sure.
That's definitely a challenge. And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I have found from doing these shows that I'm pretty much the only one married to someone not in the business. Everyone that I see is married to some sort of performer where they both leave, they're both on shows. But, you know, my husband is home when I'm doing these shows, and it's different. So it's something that he has been so generous about and understanding, even though I know it's extremely difficult for him when I, you know, just leave for 8 months and he doesn't leave for his work and he is home. So just something I have noticed, that it's actually rare for someone in the industry to marry someone outside of the industry. But that's just been my experience.
Yeah, I think that there's pluses and minuses both ways. It is, relationships in general are challenging, I think. But a relationship, if you're in show business, just there's so much more pressure and there's so many more variables, and your employment. Sometimes you're employed, sometimes you're not. And you're constantly looking for work, which mm-hmm. I think that some people who are not in our industry, I don't think they understand how much we have to find jobs. Like, it's not just like, oh, we go from show to show to show. Like, no, even in the show, we're always auditioning, sending in tapes, or reaching out and calling people that we know to try to find more work. It's never, ever ending. And that's tricky.
Yeah, you really have the hustle inside of you.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to say to anybody who's just starting out, any little nugget of advice that you have to offer?
Sure. Well, just going off the union situation, I would say just be careful and really sure that you want to join the union. You're ready to join the union and you know what it means to join the union. You know your facts, and yes, you can leave, but just do that with caution, because you don't want to leave, go back. And then ultimately they will say that, that you won't be able to go back. So you just want to make sure you have all of the facts before you join the union. And I would also say, if you're a singer or an actor first, to take dance classes. In college, I just ignored that because I didn't think I was going to be a chorus girl, whatever that means. And I would say that for some reason, I am now being cast in all of these ensemble shows and dancing a ton. It's crazy to me, but I'm going to movement calls. I'm going to dancer calls, and I am not a dancer. I can't do a split. I'm not flexible, but I can move. And even if you are a singer first or an actor first, you are going to be dancing in all of these shows, maybe not a chorus line, but I just did something rotten and I was tap dancing. You can't ignore it. And the sooner that you start taking these classes, you will just be more competitive. And maybe, you won't be a complete triple threat, but you're going to be able to book more work and just feel more comfortable in these shows. Every show I have done, I've had to move in some regards. So you want to be able to look good in those movement calls and be able to learn the routine pretty fast and just be able to have fun with it. So I think that that's definitely my biggest advice for people.
Thank you so much. There's a lot of fear around dance for some reason. And when I teach, I try to demystify it, that it's just another skill. And if you have talent in singing and if you have talent in acting, you certainly can learn how to take your talent and transfer it into your physical body. It's something that does take time, but I think that people get afraid and then they don't do it. And the key is to just go to class. Go to class. You're not going to be the best one right away. Or, I go to class. I'm not the best one. There's some fierce dancers in New York City. It's amazing how great, but I go, and it's just about doing it. And the more you do it, the better you get.
Absolutely. Yeah. I saw Company on Broadway, and I think Patti LuPone, she's either in her 60s or 70s, and she was dancing. Like, no one can escape it. Everyone is dancing. So you really just got to get over that fear. And maybe it's a fear that, I'm never to be able to get to the level that I think is acceptable is going to take so much work, but you don't need to get to that level. You need to be able to be in Hairspray. Like, you need to be able to jump up and down and get your heart rate up and, kick a leg here and there. So yeah, all of your students just need to get over that fear, because it's really important.
It's great talking to you. Where can people find you?
Sure. Well, Instagram is huge, at Leanna Rubin. It's an interesting spelling, LeannaRubin. You can find me on Instagram. And yeah, I think that's Facebook as well. Same name, Leanna Rubin. Yeah, follow me on Instagram so I can hit my 1,000 followers.
Thank you so much for your time today. It's great talking to you. I wish you all the best success, and I hope you enjoy this little break in between your jobs. And I'll be sending you messages when you're in Chicago. I'll be saying good luck and congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. My first time being interviewed on a podcast. I'm so lucky.
So this will come out in September, or probably October, actually, because I try to do is I try to have a stack of them lined up so that I'm not scrambling saying, oh my God, it's Monday, I got to get the podcast out. I try to get them organized, but I'll let you know so you can promote it. And yeah, this is a great community of people who we love show business. We just love it. And we just love talking about it.
Absolutely. This was the best half hour ever.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
The Showgirl Tip of the Day podcast has original music composed by Joshua Holloway. Find him on YouTube, Joshua Holloway Music. This podcast is written by Michelle Bruckner and edited by Michelle Bruckner and Joshua Holloway. Find me on Instagram, Showgirl Tip of Day. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week with a new episode. Sunshine.